Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's my pleasure to welcome a longtime friend to the program. His name is James. He resides in the country of Texas. Americans like to think of Texas as one of the states of the Union, but of course Texans don't look at it that way. It's the Republic of Texas. And so, first and foremost, James, welcome.
Thanks. Yeah, we Texans tend to view our presence in the state as a gift to you guys.
Yeah, I recognize that. And, of course, you have a religion in Texas that's played under the lights every Friday nights.
Yeah. Yeah. High school football is definitely a religion.
Yeah, in fact,
I've never really got or participated in, much like every other religion.
Yeah, as I understand, there are high school football stadiums in Texas that the school district has spent upwards of $20 to $25 million constructing for a single high school.
Yeah, I live in one of those areas. I think it was $17 million they spent on our stadium.
Wow, that's it's got your priorities right. There's no question about that. It's hard to beat a touchdown for encouraging people. Your background, you were an atheist, is that correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, grew up, in a not very religious home, but I was raised technically Christian. But as I tell people, my dad's family is Catholic, my mom's family is Lutheran. So if religion was even remotely important to them, I would not exist. I don't tend to get along very well.
No.
So I was taught the basics of Christianity, but that was about it. I was not a church-going person.
Yeah. And so you came out of that experience, would you say you were religious or atheist or agnostic by the time that you were out on your own?
I would have classified myself as agnostic, although looking back at it, I would probably say more deist than agnostic. I kind of believed in, I thought there was a God. To me, the evidence was just kind of overwhelming for that. But I hated religion, and I could tell that he was not to be found there. So I believed in a God, but I didn't think he was knowable.
Okay. What changed?
Well, for me, it kind of started with Gerald Schroeder's work was one of the first things that I had heard in an interview with him and found it very interesting. So I bought his book, The Science of God, and seeing the scientific accuracy of Genesis and the creation account was just like, I was like, well, okay, maybe there's something to this Torah book.
And yeah, isn't
for a while there.
I was going to say that for those who have not read Schroeder's book called The Science of God, the principal theme of that book is to present the timeline for the 6 days of creation as 14 billion years. That he uses the cosmic microwave radiation, which is the residue of the Big Bang. That's how every scientist times the Big Bang and comes up with an understanding of when it occurred. So this is not something that's fringe. This is we've sent probes up to measure this, so we know exactly how much the wavelength has been stretched in the microwave radiation that's still emanating out of the Big Bang. And he showed that the wavelength is stretched to 10 to the 12th power, which means that when you divide 14 billion years by 10 to the 12th power so that your timeline is relative to the observer, that how long did it take the creator to create the universe?
From his perspective, 6 24-hour days.
Yeah, that's the math.
And thus still being in the sixth day.
That is correct. And so when you read that and you recognize that, if you're an aficionado of science and you have an affinity for Einstein's theories, which have all been proven to be factual, about time being relative to the observer, as well as this notion that energy and matter are the same thing, just not the same amount of the same thing, which is the basis of E equals MC squared. If you have a basis or a foundation in science, and then you are confronted with the fact, wait a minute, there's no discrepancy between the 6 days of creation and a 14 billion year old universe, they're exactly the same. It's pretty stunning, isn't it?
Yeah, that's, like I said, it's one of those things that's just, you know, made me sit there and go, okay, maybe I was dismissing this. And yeah, I thought I was dismissing Scripture, not based on Scripture, but based on religious interpretations of it that I had been told. Because I'd read a King James Bible a couple times as a kid, just, you know, kind of trying to figure it all out, but never made a lot of sense. And I was reading it with the mindset of what, you know, I'd been told by these religious people who were trying to get me to read it at the time. Yeah, so to me it just was this whole thing of, you know, this doesn't make sense. And so then when I get that, it's like, okay, well, this makes a lot of sense. This isn't what I've been told, but in, you know, looking it up, this is what it says. So maybe there's something to this.
Yeah, so your argument against God and knowing in God being knowable, and God having revealed himself to us, was really not against what that God had said but or claimed, but instead what religion claimed on behalf of the God that they had conceived.
Exactly. Yeah, I made the mistake of thinking the Christians and other religious people actually knew what their scripture said.
Yes, and that is a horrible mistake. For example, you witnessed a debate that took place a couple of nights ago between a young Earth creationist and Bill Nye, the science guy, where most everything Bill Nye said, not everything, but most everything Bill Nye said was not only true, but consistent with Yahweh's account in the Torah. And much of what the young Earth, 6,000-year-old Earth creationist said was just absolutely craziness.
Yeah, just ludicrous. And it's one of those things that's, to me, if there's, you know, you take what God says and you take what science says, if there's a difference between it, and, you know, you look at what God says and there's two ways to interpret it. One is in complete harmony with what science has revealed. The other is completely against what science has revealed. Why on earth would you choose the way that completely goes against everything we can observe in the world? It makes no sense to me.
How did you end up studying the Torah? From the moment you were awakened by Gerald Schroeder, and I have read his book. I seldom recommend Schroeder's book, The Science of God, because even though he points out the math of relativity, he has an affinity for Zohar and for Kabbalah. And for the rabbinic Jewish religious traditions, and because of that affinity, there's too much poison in his book for me to recommend it. But after you read it, where'd you go next?
Well, I'd been reading through Prophet of Doom at about the same time a lot, and one day I was on Prophet of Doom looking up something for a debate I was having with a Muslim, and just off in the top corner where there was a link to this Yada Yah book, and I was like, well, let's see what he has to say about that. You know, guys, I'd been studying Prophet of Doom at that point for probably a year or two. Had, you know, I was in a very lucky position where the place I was working at the time when I was reading through Prophet of Doom was owned and run by Muslims. And I was very close
to
them.
So that was the reason.
I worked there for 9 years. So, yeah, I knew these people well, and I would sit there. I never really got into a debate or questioned it with them because I didn't feel like trying to stir up that much, and I didn't know enough. But I would bring, you know, passages here and there and be like, you know, I was reading that this is written in such and, you know, this is written in Tabari. Is that true? And they would look it up and, you know, in their Arabic version and tell me, yeah, that's exactly what it says there. So I had checked enough of your work there to, you know, built up a degree of respect for your research. So I was like, well, if he's going to tackle the Torah and, you know, the Bible at the time, I would call it, like, maybe I should give this book a shot and see what it has to say. So I started reading through Yada Yah, and it was then the first version of it, which is very drastically different than what's there now, but still was very good. And that started me going through that, and yeah, you know, a lot of the stuff that made no sense to me started to make sense because I realized, you know, it was not in this. What I thought God said and what God had said were not the same. You know, for example, one of the biggest things for me was the whole idea of heaven and hell. which was completely unjust and unfair. That these people who, you know, never knew God, never had a chance to know God. You know, some guy born in the middle of Africa under a Muslim dictatorship, never read the Bible in his life, was going to burn in hell for all eternity just by sheer luck of having been born in the wrong place. Made no sense. But then you come to find out that's not God's position. And God's position is actually fair and just.
Yes.
So,
as a matter of fact,
I started reading that.
What you did is that it was actually the credibility of Prophet of Doom, which where you verified that the evidence that I was wielding against the Islamic religion was valid, that I had quoted the hadith and the Quran accurately, and that the evidence was you checked to do on your own to validate the evidence, found it to be correct, and then viewed Prophet of Doom as this is a reasonable, rational, accurately documented case that proves conclusively that Islam is a false religion. Well, all religions are false, but that it is a extraordinarily deadly and destructive religion that is cannot be tolerated if we are going to survive on this planet.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But I didn't stop there, because when I was reading through Yada Yada, and I would come across these translations you had done, and you know, while they made sense to me, I was like, these are so drastically different than what I'm reading in every English Bible I pick up. So I'm like, well, one, either he's making this up, or these translations are bad. So that was when I decided, you know, I needed to invest a little money and a little time, and I purchased, you know, like you said, you don't really recommend it now because they have changed so drastically, but Logos at the time. I purchased the original language package so I could sit there and go through and check your translations. I'm like, these are so drastically different. Like, well, I, you know, he was, you know, everything I've checked on them seems like he's legit and he's not just making stuff up. I should check this because otherwise, if I'm having a discussion with a friend or family member and they're like, oh, well, you're just using his translations. They're, you know, how do you know those are right? I wanted to be able to say, well, I know they're right because of this. So I purchased Logos. It was about a $400 investment at the time, and I sat down and started with checking up on every verse, you know, I'd come to that seemed, you know, mostly I started with the ones that were drastically different. A lot of them, you're like, okay, I can see where you get this from this. And really, you're just expanding on the word that was already there, but, you know, and narrowing it into a better understanding. So the ones that were drastically different was where I started, you know, checking one at a time and came to realize, you know, okay, I see how he got this. I see how he got that.
James, we'll just hold it right there. We'll be back after the commercial break and continue with this discussion with James regarding Yada Yada. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're interviewing James. For those who do not know, James is the administrator of the Yada Yada forum. For those that don't know, we actually do have a forum on the Yada Yada. YadaYada.com is the book that we're talking about here that presents the creation account, and then the account of the flood, the account of the formation of the covenant, and then it goes on to present the invitation that God has made available to us for us to meet with him, and then the eyewitness accounts that are provided in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms regarding Yosha's life and the fulfillment of the first four of those invitations. James, what you're saying here is that that a book, one that used the relative nature of time, opened your eyes to say, wait a minute, there is some validity here to a creation account that I have previously rejected out of hand. And that caused you to say, well, if that's the case, and that's pretty profound, maybe I ought to consider what else this alleged deity has to say. And that because I had earned some credibility with you for the evidence and reasoned approach to Prophet of Doom, which exposes and condemns the Islamic religion, your fact-checking there led you then to Yada Yada, and you took exactly the same approach there, which is the approach I recommend for everyone. Don't trust anything that I have produced here as evidence. Check it out for yourself. Do the validation yourself. And that's what you did once again, wasn't it?
Yeah. And that's become one of my passions in life is actually delving into Yah's word on my own and translating and studying it that way, because it's just so much fun. And yeah, it's one of those things, like, the whole science aspect is what got me in. And then, with the Adiyah, with all the prophecy, was really interesting, and seeing the fulfillment and these predictions, and you could see it being, coming to life in our world today. But as it came through, it got more and more. And you've mentioned this before, the whole, the comparison between the pin and the lily, and the more and more you get into the word, and the, how do I phrase it, the exactness of it, the beauty of the way the words are written, the perfection of it is just overwhelming. At that point, you just can't reject it at all.
Yeah, the more closely you examine it, the more you amplify what Yahweh has revealed to us, the more beautiful, the more profound, the more enlightening it is, where with almost everything that man does, the closer you look, the more flaws you begin to see in the arguments that are being raised. When you you mentioned two things that were profoundly important to you. One was the consistency of Yahweh's own testimony with what we know to be true scientifically, where everything he said about creation, right to the point of the using the term Big Bang and this transition from energy to matter that began the process, that everything he said was consistent in the order of things and the description of things in creation, and that was profound. But then the next thing that you found that was hugely important, and my guess is this is true for every agnostic, and even if you were more of a deist in the Jeffersonian tradition than an agnostic, is that I find that most agnostics are agnostics because they recognize that the Christian position, which says you either go to heaven or hell, makes the God who makes that call sadistic. That if he says you will either acquiesce to what I am offering, or I'm going to see to it that you're tortured forever in hell, that such a God would not be lovable. He would be demonic. And having that resolved was a big issue for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was probably one of the biggest issues I had with all religions. Because, I mean, that is, it's not just Christianity. That is Islam. That is Judaism. Well, Judaism is more if you're a good person. They have a whole thing there. But all religions are based on this carrot and stick approach of heaven and hell.
Right.
Which, makes sense if you're a religion trying to garner more followers so you can, fleece the flock. But it is not, doesn't make sense at all if you're a loving, caring God wanting to know your creation.
Correct. Yeah, the reality is that while every Christian preacher and every Christian book I've ever read, and I used to be a Christian, I was an evangelical Christian, I was an ordained ruling elder in the Presbyterian Church, so I had it up to the eyeballs. And that position, that there is only a heaven and hell, and you either go to one of those two places, is central to the Christian religion. And yet, when you actually read the testimony of Yahweh, what you find is that very, very few people go to either of those two destinations, and the vast preponderance simply cease to exist. God's testimony and religion do not correspond. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm Yada. We're here with James talking about the transition from reading the book A Prophet of Doom and coming to recognize that evidence and reason were effectively wielded at Islam so that we would be able to protect ourselves from and those we love from Islamic terrorism, to Yada Yah, which focused on prophetic statements from Yahweh, the God who authored the Torah and prophets. And James, we were talking about this universal myth that of Christianity, Islam as well, that all souls either go to heaven or hell, and that for most rational people, that's the ultimate non-starter. That's the one that turns them off the most in terms of even considering what God might be like, because if these religions are correctly presenting this information from their God, then their God is sadistic. God says, either love me or I'm going to see to it that you're tortured in hell. It's just not lovable.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, it was real fun because about the same time I was starting to read all this and study all this is when I met my wife. And at the time we were just dating, you know, Yah's word was probably one of the most common topics of conversation on our dates, which was great. I loved it and we had a good time. But she came from a very different background than me. She came from a church-going religious home. But even she had issues with this. You know, she had talked with her dad about it and talked with other people about it. And, you know, she, rather than rejecting the, you know, religion outright from that, she just kind of assumed, you know, I know God to be loving and caring. He must have a way to deal with this that I don't understand. And rather than try and find the answer, you know, it was more just, you know, I'm going to accept that this is not right. This can't be right. I don't know what his solution is, but he must have one. So, I think a lot of religious people are bothered by this as well. Or at least I would like to think,
Yeah, I think you're right. I came across this realization while writing Yada Yada. I came out of the Christian religion, so I at one time embraced that as one of the challenges that I couldn't answer. And as I was translating passages from Hosea, which means salvation, Hosea is the way it's listed in the Hebrew prophets. I ran across a statement that seem to indicate that the souls of those who are that don't know Yahweh, who have not chosen to participate in the covenant, cease to exist. And I said, wait a minute. Ceasing to exist and eternal torment in hell or eternal life in heaven, those things, they don't fit together. You can't die and cease to exist and be tortured forever in hell. You can't die and cease to exist and have eternal life in heaven. So if there is no way you can have a third option unless there are three options, because that just does not work. And I recall then saying, but I thought that the Christian New Testament presented that as you go to one place or the other, and you ought to dread the one. And so I looked up every reference I could find to the fate of human souls. And what I found was that over 99% of the references to the fate of human souls don't speak of eternal life, either in heaven or hell. It says that simply if you don't know God, you don't participate in the covenant, he doesn't know you. You get your mortal existence, and at the end of it, it's just over. No penalty, no pain, no punishment. Your soul ceases to exist. And all of a sudden,
fair and logical.
Fair, logical, reasonable. And, you were given mortal life, and in your mortal life, you were given the opportunity to embrace the covenant and come to know Yahweh and to engage in a relationship with him. You were given the opportunity to oppose him as well. And what you did during that life would determine whether or not you spend eternity with him, spend eternity separated from him, or just simply cease to exist. And all of a sudden, now you have a profound truth that is communicated probably 1,000 times in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And all of a sudden you say, wow, now here's the single biggest myth of the Christian religion. And it has been laid bare and exposed in complete contradiction with God. What else has the Christian religion lied about? That was my response to that, probably similar to yours.
Yeah, I was more along the lines of, you know, okay, well, maybe this religion stuff, like I said, maybe these people don't really actually know what their Bible says.
Yes.
That's what it is they don't know what their Bible says. They know what their pastor teaches them, and
right.
That's about it. They follow that much more than actually reading it. And when they do read it, they read it with the mindset of what they've been taught in their religion. And so anything that doesn't conform to that, they just kind of gloss over and ignore and just look for stuff to confirm what they've been taught.
Correct. Or just a lousy translation. Yosha in his Instruction on the Mount, speaks of the death and destruction of souls, and that being the most popular choice, people choosing to go along with the majority, and it ends up that their souls are that they die and their souls are destroyed. They cease to exist, and people just not dealing with that, or just not rational enough, if you're religious, to say, wait a minute, the destruction and death of a soul is not the same as eternal punishment in hell. So there has to be a third option. And with the third option, all of a sudden, everything makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to consider it?
One of the biggest confirmations of that is just look up what the word for soul in Hebrew means. You look in the dictionary for that word, and one of the definitions is mortal.
Yes.
You know, by definition, the soul is mortal. And then you look at the fact that animals have souls. You know, read Genesis and look where, you know, it says in English translations, you'll read living creatures, and then you'll read living souls. But in Hebrew, the word is identical. It's chay nefesh.
Yes.
So all animals have souls. So then you're saying all animals are going to hell, or all animals are going to heaven. You know?
Yeah.
Then you realize the soul is mortal. All animals die, and their soul ceases to exist. Humans, being nothing more than an animal, are in that same category.
You probably also know that that while the primary definition of nefesh is soul, and it is used to convey soul, probably 99.5% of the times that it's used, it also conveys breath, doesn't it?
Yes.
And when your mortal soul ceases to exist, what happens to a person's breath?
It ceases to exist.
Yeah, that's right. That's why when somebody is wanting to know if somebody is dead, they'll put a finger under their nose, or they'll check for breath. We have Rick James, who is called in from Nevada, that's either got a question or a comment. Go ahead, Rick.
Yes, good morning, Yada. And thank you for continuing on with the Torah teaching. I really appreciate it. And
thank you.
So I just wanted to call in and let you know and the listeners know that it's been almost 2 years now since I was fortunate enough to find you as a guest on another talk show. And your presentation of what you had studied and what you learned came across as so genuine and so honest and so logical that I, and it also offered what I intuitively had sensed, because I came from a Christian background as well, and intuitively I sensed that there was something wrong with the Christian ideology. And I think if one is honest, the Christian ideology stems from man-made religion, which is simply not true. It's only true in the context of being a fallacy. And
right.
So me personally, I intuitively felt that. And so upon emailing you, you sent me ITG, and I read the whole thing. It was pretty arduous. there's a lot there. And you prefaced your email with letting me know that. And
yes.
But the freedom that was given me from learning and understanding the Torah, which means teaching, not law, is invaluable. It's completely released me from the Christian religious mental and emotional gymnastics that a person finds themselves going through as a result of trying to reconcile a fallacy.
Right. Yeah, that's the best part. And James, you probably have a comment here as well. But my favorite part of going on this voyage of discovery through Yahweh's testimony, and the ITG is the Introduction to God. You'll find it at introtogod.org, introtogod.org. And it's a systematic, an arduous, if you will, it's a systematic analysis of the seven topics that are most important to Yahweh, which is God's one and only name. And it walks the reader through his word, his name, his covenant relationship, his Torah teaching, and all the way through his instructions. And as it walks readers through these things, it begins by establishing a foundation, which is why it is so lengthy. And it says, all right, here are the oldest manuscripts that we have. Here's the difference between the various manuscripts. Here's the actual letters that that comprise the words that we're going to be reading, and this is what these letters look like. This is what they mean, and then here's a little review of Hebrew grammar, because it's unlike any other grammar in the world, and it's going to be really important if you understand the grammar as we go through, when we spent two programs talking about grammar. And then it said, all right, now that you've got this foundation, and I've provided you with a list of interlinears and lexicons and dictionaries that you can use to validate everything that you're going to read, and I want you to go through the process of validating it. Let's use those tools together, and let's go through what God has to tell us. And ultimately, what you find is that all of the gymnastics that you have to go through to try to justify contradictions with religion, all of a sudden you're freed of all of that. You know, all of this mythology, all of this leap of faith that you've got to take, it just all goes away. And you find one consistent, brilliant story that answers every important question being laid out before us.
And the validation of God's testimony is experiential, in that your mind is opened up and you're freed from the fallacies that you held before. But the other validation is in taking a look at the hundreds, if not thousands, of prophecies.
We're going to run up to a break here, but stay with us, Rick. The prophecies validate the fact that Yahweh authored his word. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Rick has brought up the merit of the Introduction to God, and it is a book written not in summary fashion. It's, as you said, it's an arduous task to work through it because it is so comprehensive. And the basic thought process there is that unless you're really committed to wanting to know who God is and what he's offering, there is no way you're going to endure that much information. But if that you are genuinely interested in knowing who God is and what he's offering and how you can participate in his covenant and therefore be saved, then there's no amount of information on that is too much. And so that was kind of the spirit that it was written in. But, James, you know, you talked about being focused on prophecy. And the Introduction to God is focused on teaching and understanding. Wasn't there a value? I mean, at least I was hoping there would be a value in focusing on creation and prophecy. Because of the consequences of having to deal with consistently accurate testimony in history and in future history. Is that what you found?
Yeah, I think Yada Yada is definitely a book that I would recommend before Introduction to God for an atheist or an agnostic.
Right.
But before we continue, I wanted to make a comment on something Rick had said real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he kept using the term that he intuitively knew that there was something wrong. And I would say that intuition is what we would call in psychology, psychologists would call cognitive dissonance, which is, yeah, for those who don't know, the mental stress and discomfort that comes from holding two contradictory views or ideas.
Right.
And, you know, for instance, you know, holding the belief that God is loving, caring, and desires a relationship, and that same God said, you know, love me or burn for eternity in hell. And,
right,
you know, faith and belief require a suspension of cognitive dissonance. And I would argue that that's why religions are so big on community and congregation, that whole reassuring each other. You know, when you hold that, you have this discomfort from, you know, these two contradictory beliefs, having people around you, you know, constantly reaffirming it helps alleviate that to a point, which is why they,
right,
you know, are so angered and, you know, lash out at anyone who will, you know, question that or put them in discomfort by pointing out their, you know, differences.
Yeah, so let me give you an example.
That's what the intuition was.
Right. Let me give you an example of that. Paul's every word contradicts God's every word. Right? Everything that Paul says is contradictory to the antithesis of what God said. And so if you're going to accept Paul and therefore the Christian religion, you have to reject God. And that puts one's mind on in a very precarious place. It's a very uncomfortable place, and the only thing that a religious person, a Christian, can do is therefore to not make these connections, and to surround themselves with other people who, through faith, are also willing to reject making these comparisons.
And you were correct in inferring that majority of people in our society that go along with the popular teaching that is out there, and as Shane said, they'll adhere to the fallacies to their death. I speak right. with Christians all the time, right. and no matter what kind of logic and reason you juxtapose the Torah versus Christianity, most of them are not going to hear it. And
right.
fortunately, for those who were open-minded enough to begin to immerse themselves in the studies that you did and God's teaching, they can do an about-face from following a bunch of lies made by man. And furthermore, the Torah brilliantly outlines in detail creation, and it does so magnificently, and
yes.
so, and the Torah is the only book that has proven itself through prophecy and creation account, intelligent design, and that no other can lay claim to that.
Yeah.
So
matter of fact,
validation there.
Yeah, I would think that it you could universally state, and based upon the tens of thousands of emails that I've received over the past 10 years, that not a single Christian has read Questioning Paul and remained a Christian. Not a single atheist or agnostic has read Yada Yada and remained an atheist or an agnostic. And not a single person who has been religious has read An Introduction to God and retained their religion.